guys. Welcome back to Vertical Momentum. I'm your host, Richard Kaufman. Yes, you're seeing me for the sixth time today. I'm still energized. Thank you, Summit Plaza GNC. Thank you, Jim Molly, for keeping me up and motivated. But guys, I read that I can eat anything I want and still be in shape. So I had 15 cheeseburgers and Taco Bell before I got here. No, guys, I'm just joking. Okay, but we're going to be talking about health, fitness with and I want to talk is because anybody can walk around at the age of 18 with abs. It's not too hard to do. And a lot of people, like Anoop was talking about earlier before we got on, is people think that, you know, if you're skinny, you're healthy. No, you know, there's such thing as skinny fat. And we're going to talk about that also. So I want to welcome Ann and Anoop to the show. I'm so grateful. Devin Rodriguez, thank you for hooking us up, guys. So, guys, thank you so much for hanging out today. You guys are truly amazing. And I've had a lot of fitness people on my show, from Mr. Olympias, Mrs. Olympias, but not many people are actually both registered nurses, so actually know what the bodies and the endocrinological systems are. So I'm grateful to be able to talk with you guys because you not only walk the walk, you talk the talk, and you have the knowledge behind you. So welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you so much, Richard. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much for having
me. I love it. So my first question is, I'm going to ask you both. First, Ann, you know, what is your definition of resiliency?
For sure. It's really finding out what your passion is and having the grit to go for it until you get there and beyond. So this is what has helped me to start from where I was, you know, 10, 15 years ago to where I am today, where I'm super happy about. So it's all about the grit, having that grit and keep moving forward until you get there.
Anoop, what about you?
So in my say, like you said, walk the walk, talk the talk, make sure you're doing what you're preaching, and you stand by it. You believe in what you're doing so that you can do a really good job.
Okay, so obviously you're not from New Jersey. You guys have a little bit of a different accent. So tell us a little bit about each of you, where you come from, where did you grow up, and how did you get into this crazy world of health and fitness? And I'll start with you, Ann.
For sure, yeah. So we both actually grew up in India, and we lived there for 20 years. We moved to Canada. We live here in British Columbia, Canada. And we moved here approximately 10 or 11 years ago at this point. Us getting into the health and fitness side of things actually really started from back home because we both are registered nurses and we got our registration and we got our nursing degree and all that back from India. We actually moved here to Canada to pursue our post-graduation certification. So we both certified in critical care after we moved here to Canada and emergency medicine. So along the lines of that, as working in the critical care unit and especially in the ER, really opened up our eyes about how important taking care of your health is, meaning how important preventative health is, which is not really talked about a lot these days. Just think about it. We only see a doctor if we have a problem, right? And the problem has to be so bad for us to really take a damn action. So, like having that ER experience and seeing a lot of youngsters coming to the ER with obesity, it really blows your mind when you see that kind of people coming in and they have all these metabolic disability, you know, disorders like diabetes, hypertension, dyslipidemia, and all those things in their 30s. And they're just so young to have those kind of things. So, and I also struggled with a lot of hormonal imbalances, which is what actually led us into the fitness aspect of things, diving more deep into that and figuring out what is the way to get to the other end, you know, through a balance in nutrition and still like learning how to eat whatever you want and not taking the diet route. So that's how it started for us. And this is where we are today, now helping more people around the world do the same thing through our coaching.
All right, now let me ask you a question because my best friend, he actually is sponsoring today's show, Summit Plaza GNC. His name is Kumar Aditya, and he comes from India. Sure. And we talk about it all the time as how you know, in India, very low cases of arthritis, inflammation, cancer. But when a lot of Indian culture come here, the diabetes just shoots up. And for me, I think a lot is because of the food over there. You know, it has a lot of turmeric, curcumin, you know, a lot of anti-inflammatory properties. Do you think that's one of the reasons that they have? I mean, it's not a zero cancer rate, but they have a pretty low cancer rate compared to the United States. Do you think it could be the food?
I would say like 90% of it food. I'm just going to share my take on it, because in India, when you think about fast food, it's crazy expensive. Okay. You're not going to get fast food for cheap compared to here in North America. You get fast food. It's easily accessible. You can get a burger for $3. Right. And back in India, like, you have to pay a lot of money to get to get like fast food. So it's not like a daily thing for like Indian food culture. So we technically prepare our food at home, like on a daily basis. And us going out and eating out is maybe like once a month or something. But after moving here, we find ourselves actually going out more and like gravitating towards fast food a lot, compared to when we were in India, because it's so easy. The life here is way too fast paced compared to back in India. So there are so much differences actually that we cannot really pinpoint this, or this could be the reason why it is. But I believe it's the availability of hyper palatable food is much more high here in North America compared to where we come from.
Yeah, I think back home, along the lines, like Anne said, we tend to eat more whole foods. We try to prepare food at home. So it's more healthy in that sense. And here, you because of the fast-paced our work and life balance, we tend to eat more fast food, especially more processed food. Even if we are making food at home, we tend to choose processed food because it's just easier. It comes in a package or whatever. And another thing is the marketing. We don't like the stuff on the front of the container is basically marketing, and it just really attracts you. You don't really look into the nutrition aspect of the back of the container. And back in India, it's not as a big deal, because you don't you try and choose whole food most of the time, especially when you're cooking the Indian way of cooking. You use a lot of spices. One of the spices is turmeric, which is also an inflammatory aspect as well. So I think it's a combination of all that. And like when you're used to, when you lived your life with one kind of diet, and if you're changing to pretty much unhealthy diet all of a sudden, especially with the high fat percentage diet, that does affect your metabolism quite a lot, and that can affect.
Well, one thing I've noticed in the health and fitness industry over maybe the last 12 years is in India, in Saudi Arabia, bodybuilding has exploded. Like my friend, he actually has a worldwide bodybuilding show, and he runs it called the Sharu Classic. And it's amazing how supplements, how important and big supplements have gotten in India, and also in in some other parts of the country. So are you seeing that, or have you seen that big boom coming to where, you know, they're starting to get more fitness athletes and more bodybuilding athletes coming from India than from before?
It is increasing for sure. Like 10 years ago, 12 years, 20 years ago, when we were actually living there, the fitness aspect of things, like people getting into more like bodybuilding and like aesthetic fitness and all that, was not talked about. Maybe in the cities, there might be, but now it's getting more mainstream, it's getting more popular. I believe the social media right now, you know, and people talking about fitness and seeing all these women and men looking so, you know, snatched and, you know, so sexy with six packs and everything, is really getting into, you know, the youngsters now. And they're really taking that effort to, build that body they want. And also like supplements is also becoming more mainstream, and there is more knowledge about it right now. And there is more availability as well. So I feel like, yeah, it is getting there. And I feel like in the years to come, for the next 10 years, it is going to be like even more blown up compared to what it is today, for sure.
Okay, so now, but, you know, we're talking about, because I'm 55, we're talking about, you know, ages 30 and up, because I know it, like at 29, I can eat 5 slices of pizza. I'm good. 30, the day I turn 30, I eat 1 slice and I gain like 5 pounds because my hormones start going out of whack. So talk to us about the differences between a 20-year-old body and a 30-year-old body with their hormones and also with their fitness levels.
It's mainly to do with your metabolic rate and your metabolism. So when you're less than 30 or usually around in your 20s, you're basically still in your growth phase. Scientifically speaking, up to 21, they technically say your growth stops after 21. But depending on so many factors and depending on individual, it can go up to like 25. So you're actively growing, you're consuming more calories. So even if you're eating more calories or more food, even bad food, your body's actually consuming all that. It's using that to grow. So that takes a lot of energy. So even if you're eating a lot of food, your body will be able to actually use that energy. Whereas once you hit 30, you're not growing anymore at all. Your growth rate goes down. Your cell reproduction rate goes down. So once that's happening, even if you're not eating that much, if you're eating less than what you used to eat, your body doesn't need that much energy anymore. So what happens is, if your body doesn't need energy, the only way the body knows to store energy is by converting it into fat. So it's going to convert into fat for future use, and that's how we end up getting fat deposition happening and our weight goes up.
Yeah, and especially for females, like, it's very different. Like, once I experienced this myself, like, once I crossed that 30 age, it's especially difficult for me to maintain my tummy flat. It's very hard. And, you know, you give birth, those kind of things is also going to add up. But the way your sex hormones are fluctuating, and this is very unfortunate, and probably it's because of our lifestyle changes and, you know, we eat and consuming unhealthy food a lot. What we are seeing right now is, if women went into perimenopause around 40 years, you know, 10, 20 years ago, now we are seeing women going into perimenopause as early as 30, you know, so that shift has also happened, meaning during this time period, our sex hormones are dropping quite a bit. Not just dropping, it keeps fluctuating. It keeps going up and down, which has a direct hit on the metabolism, the way we burn calories as well. So one of the other reasons why it's especially difficult for us females, and this is true for men as well, that it's challenging for them, and that one slice of pizza makes them gain 5 pounds the next day.
Okay, now let's go to the men's section, because I know that, you know, after a certain age, you know, your testosterone starts leveling off. And when you're at my age, you know, if you're not taking care of yourself, working out and eating right, your testosterone can plummet, or your estrogen levels start going up because of some of the food you start taking. And yeah, so when your estrogen goes up, your test kind of shits the bed. So talk about a man and his testosterone.
Yeah, for sure. So men's testosterone, like, just like female sex hormone, it also fluctuates, but like, females are a little bit more symptomatic than men are. And this also ties to the way you store fat and also the way you build muscle at the same time. Because if you think about it, testosterone is the hormone that helps with that muscle mass, that muscle building. And you guys, like men, have, I'm not saying it's easy for you to lose weight, but compared to a female, it's relatively easy for you guys to lose fat because you have more metabolically active tissue, aka the muscle. But when you think about it from a hormonal standpoint, as we age, especially after we cross that 40, 45 years, your testosterone will start to drop, meaning the amount of muscle mass you have is dropping, meaning your metabolism is slowing down because you do not have that much muscle mass compared to you had in your 20s. So this is all tied together. And one of the reasons why, you know, it makes sense, right? When we all put these pieces together, it makes sense why it becomes challenging for you guys to actually lose that weight, and especially that tummy fat, that big bulge that you see for most men over the age of 40, 45.
Okay, so, you know, I was joking around, obviously, when I said that you can eat whatever you want and still lose weight. For me, because I have a lot of personal training clients, and I told them, you know, it can be a numbers game, but it's not. I mean, if your calories are 3,000 calories, but it all comes from fast food, you're not going to be as healthy that if you ate 3,000 calories of lean meats, fruits, and vegetables. But I also think that you have to enjoy life a little bit. Because I know a lot of people, January 1st, New Year, New Me bullshit, they're all going to go on a diet. And within 3 weeks, they're off the diet because it's not something that you can sustain long term, correct? So talk to us about that, you know, eating whatever you want, but still being fit.
Sure. Yeah. Now, yes, when I say you can eat whatever you want, I'm not really talking about you eating 20 Twinkies every single day and still having a flat stomach. Okay. I hate to say this to you, like you can't. If that's what you mean by quote unquote eating whatever you want, then of course, like you won't be able to achieve that. But what I'm saying
is
that
guys, we gotta go, guys. We gotta go.
But what I'm saying is, like, if you want to eat a pizza, you should be able to eat it, and that should not make you gain 5 pounds tomorrow. Okay. You should be able to enjoy that and not feel guilty about it. And that should not sabotage your resources, what I'm talking about here. Because, I mean, if I ask you to eat salad, or if you ask your coach people to eat just salad and healthy and clean all the time, it's not rocket science. They are going to stay fit and all that. But, you know, we have life out of that, right? Like we have Christmas, we have New Year's, we have other parties that we go to, we drink, we smoke, we do so many different things. So those things like literally should not sabotage our results. So as long as we learn how to eat the food the right way, and I hate to break this to you, like it's not just number game anymore. Once you cross that 35 and up, there are so many other things that comes into the picture, especially your hormones. So it's very important to understand where you're standing from a hormonal standpoint and tie that to your metabolism, and really helping your body to improve your resting metabolic rate is going to be the key for like losing belly fat and also losing that extra weight you have when you as you go over the age of 35. But coming back to the point of eating whatever you want, that's technically possible as long as you learn how to do it the right way.
Okay. So what is your take on it, Anu?
So basically, like I said, if you want to eat like 20, if you're a person who eats 20, 30 Twinkies a day, that's not normal. Like there should be a reason why you're eating it. It might be to do with your habit, eating habit, or sometimes we learn that you have to change the way you're eating. I think we had a client who was eating, wanted to eat pastries every single day.
Yeah.
And then we were able to include that in her diet because like we can work around. If there's something in particular that you can't live without or something like that, you can obviously work around because that's just one thing is not going to make or break anything. And there's always things like there are certain foods that should be pairing up with other foods. An example would be like people say that apples look really healthy and apple a day, they keep the doctor away and all those things. Yeah, apple is really healthy, but apple or any fruit for that matter is considered as a simple carb. So anything simple carb or anything of that sort get digested really fast. And whenever that happens, you get a sugar spike in your blood. And whenever sugar spike happens, a portion of that is going to get deposited as fat because like all of a sudden you have like a sugar spike, your body doesn't know what to do with, even though it's a small sugar spike, your body wouldn't know, don't know how, like can't use that sugar spike all of a sudden. So it uses a portion of it for your normal body function. The remaining is going to deposit as fat, even though small, that's happening. So a better way of eating that same apple would be pairing up with some a little bit of nuts, where nuts has a little bit of fat as well as protein. So you're technically eating more food than you were if you were just to eat an apple. But when you're pairing up with that apple with that protein and fat, it basically becomes a complex food. So it takes longer time to digest. You are getting the same same amount of sugar from the apple, but it doesn't happen in a huge spike. It's going to be a gradual increase and a gradual decline. So your body will be actually able to use that energy. You will be able to use that sugar. So it won't lead to a fat deposition compared to eating that apple alone. So same applies to eating a donut or something like sugary stuff. If you're just eating that donut highly sugary stuff, you're going to have high sugar spike. First of all, it's a processed food. It's not great. But if you want to have that, you can still have that. But instead of having that donut alone, make sure you pair it up with something with good protein and a little bit of good fat. It can be like having actually some kind of meat along with it. If you're having a sandwich, you can have a donut. You're technically eating more food, or you can have some nuts. So you're technically eating more food, more calories, but it's not as bad as just eating that donut alone. Hope that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm also going to ask, because when I was bodybuilding at one time, I know that I was pretty strict for like 5 or 6 days in a row. And then I'd have one day, which was Sunday, for my cheat day. And because I had that one cheat day or a meal or two, that Monday, my metabolism just ramped up. And on that Tuesday, I would lose like 2 to 3 pounds just because my metabolism was like, oh, my God, I have all this food in me. I can start burning calories again. So, you know, what are your thoughts on having, you know, maybe a cheat meal once or twice a week or a cheat day? So, like, for me, I always thought, like you're talking about with pizza, you know, why am I going to have a slice of pizza on Monday if I can eat the whole pie on a Sunday? So what are your thoughts on having a cheat meal or a cheat day during the week?
It will really depend on exactly what your goal is, right? Like if you are really trying to get like a body, like bodybuilder, you know, where the body, like a bodybuilder has, like the body fat percentage is very, very low. So then they have to be very meticulous about how many calories they're putting in. You know, the wiggle room is very less there, you know, so that's one goal. Another goal would be just, you know, just being able to enjoy the life and still stay within the normal BMI, have a little bit of a muscle, but they're not really overly concerned about bringing their fat percentage to 8%, you know? So those are like 85% of the men or women, you know, that has a regular life. They're not really concerned about having a very, very strict routine or strict body so it will really depend on what exactly your goal is. So when you're talking about a bodybuilding standpoint, of course, you have to be very strict with what goes into your body, because it's all about the number game. It's all about bringing down that fat percentage to a certain number so that you are able to visibly see that abs that you're putting work to, all the other muscle. But if your goal is to just like have a normal life but still have a great body and your belly fat not bulge out and you don't look like 8 months pregnant, then I would say like don't consider a day or two for your cheat meal day. Learn to incorporate those days into your regular weekdays. Learn to incorporate how to eat those things whenever you want, rather than just designating one particular day for a cheat day, right? And eating whatever you want and sabotaging all the work you put in during that week time. Okay. So this will give you a little bit more flexibility and you wouldn't be in this like yo-yo diet cycle pattern forever. If you give yourself permission to enjoy the food you want, whenever you want, but then you are being mindful about it, you are cultivating some healthy habits to go along with it. So it will really depend on what goal you're after. I hope that I answered the question.
And like the more strict you are, like if you're bodybuilding, yeah, like you said, you have to be realistic. But for most of us who just want a fit body, not looking for that six-pack abs or whatever, because of our life, we have family to take care of, we have kids to look after. So it's really hard to be too strict with our diet and with our exercise. And especially if you're restricting yourself, then that's when you think about, oh, yeah, I need to have one or two cheat days a week, or at least one cheat day a week kind of scenario. Because like you're craving that food. Like Anne said, like if you are able to incorporate the food you're normally eating to your diet and your exercise, and if not, especially if you're not over-exercising, then you won't actually think about having a cheat day. Because like if you want to have a pizza like a day, if you think you want to have that and you are able to eat that without sabotaging yourself, and you probably won't have a urge to eat a whole pizza
on the weekend
or something like that, right? That's the difference between like a too restrictive diet and just eating the food you normally eat.
And learning
okay, how to... Cool. Yep, yeah. So let's talk about a couple fads that are around now. I know I feel better when I eat a lower carb, when I eat a little bit more heavier protein, I feel a little bit more energy. I don't feel as sluggish. I don't feel as tired. But you know, a lot of people were on that whole keto thing for about 3 weeks and it got really popular, but people realized I'm going to lose the weight, but I'm going to gain it all back plus 5 pounds. So talk about the whole keto phase and how I don't think it's great long term.
Yeah, like people whoever does keto or any kind of diet for that matter, always just put your time, just look up the kind of diet you're going to do. Just read the literature material so that you understand what you're getting into. Like in case of keto diet, if you read the actual literature, it'll tell you not to do that for more than 6 months. So if you do keto diet for more than 6 months, it'll tell you that you'll have, there's high chance of liver damage or liver issues that could happen. Because what basically keto diet is, you're eating, you're going to be increasing the amount of fat you're going to consume. And you're going to decrease your carb. For sure, you're going to lose a lot of fat really fast. While that's happening, your liver is literally struggling to keep up with the high amount of fat that you're consuming. And the body weight and the body composition changing and everything. So it's really, really hard on your organs, especially your liver. So the chances of having liver issues is like super high if you continue a strict keto diet for more than 6 months. So any kind of diet, if you start doing it, there's going to be a point that you're going to stop doing it after a couple months. Or very rarely people will stick to up to an year or so. So you always have to think what happens when you stop doing that particular diet. You're going to go back to your food that you enjoy, that you like, that your normal food is. So what happens then? People don't really think about it. They'll be like, oh yeah, my friend did keto diet or this and this diet. They lost 10 pounds or 20 pounds in 2-3 months. Oh, it's amazing. They look amazing. They feel amazing and everything. But they don't really follow up on what happened to that particular friend after 1 year, or what happened to that particular friend after 1.5 years or 2 years when they stopped doing that particular diet? Were they able to maintain it? Were they able to sustain their weight loss? No one really checks into that. They just see the initial results and they'll be like, oh yeah, that's amazing. I want to do that. But like when you stop doing that diet, when you go back to your food, you're changing your diet pattern again. So you're going to gain back all the weight you're going to lose. And most of the time, what we see is that you actually gain more weight than you actually lost, because you went back to your food. And then, but the worst case scenario is people try that same diet again because they have some function coming up. They want to look good again. So they know that if you do this kind of diet, I'm going to lose 10, 20 pounds in such a short duration of time. And then they go ahead and do that diet again just for that function, just so that they can fit in such a so-and-so clothes, just so that they can look good, and they do that diet again. But yeah, you're going to look good. You're going to lose weight. You're going to look good in that short duration of time. But again, you're going to stop. You're going to go back. It's kind of a vicious loop. But rather than losing your, you're not just losing your time or money or anything. You're also look at your health, your organ condition. Like as you age, it's already difficult. Like when you're really young, it's your cells are reproducing really fast. Your organs are actually repairing itself really fast. But as you age, that's not going to happen. Everything is going to slow down. You're already going to run into issues depending on your age, your build and everything. So you don't want to put too much pressure into your organs or your health anymore. So when you're repeatedly doing this kind of diet, that's putting more and more issues, more and more, it's going to cause more and more problems for you along your journey.
And one other thing it actually does, it really makes your body metabolically inflexible. So meaning metabolically inflexible mean your body will get trained so that it will only burn fat in the presence of certain kind of food groups, you know, meaning bringing that, tying that to carbohydrates, right? So in a keto diet, people go as low as 15% carbohydrates. So that's very, very, very low carbohydrates. So now your body do not really know how to process fat and burn it. Burn fat in presence of carbohydrates. So your body is becoming metabolically inflexible there. So the moment you start to add, and one mistake people do with keto diet is they do not do this process called reverse keto. So in reverse keto, what you're supposed to do is slowly increase your carbohydrate every grams. I believe it's 5 grams or something every single week to bring your carbohydrate back to normal, right? Until you do that, you won't be able to maintain your weight. You're going to keep looping in that cycle. So people really miss this. They do the keto diet. They think they can go back and eat whatever they want and still maintain it. They can't, because their body is now metabolically inflexible and their body is going to freak out in the presence of carbohydrates. So that piece they miss out a lot, I feel like. Most people that we work with, they don't even know what a reverse keto is. They've never done it. They just keep doing the keto over and over again. That's one piece. Another piece also is the emotional damage it's actually doing to yourself, right? So people that have been in diet for such a long time gets to a point, and this is very sad. I literally talk to a lot of women on a daily basis, and they say, I don't believe you, Anne. I don't believe you when you say that I can eat regular food and enjoy my food guilt-free and look amazing at the same time. I don't. Because I've never experienced that in my life, and I've been working towards my health goal for entire life at this point now. So the emotional damage it is doing is like, it's next level. And that takes a long time for people to fix and go, get over as well, I believe, with diets.
Okay, so now, and obviously, since you brought up the metabolic, you know, a lot of people are pre-diabetic, or a lot of people metabolic syndrome X, or whatever you guys want to call it. You know, so talk to us, you know, should we try to, I mean, even if we don't eliminate all the refined sugars, should that's something that we should be focused on as we get older? Because I know in America, the obesity factor is just off the chain. So should we look at, you know, worrying about refined foods, saturated fats? Should we try to go a little bit more lean meat, vegetables, fruits, or what are your thoughts?
So I would say do not try to get to the either end of the spectrum. Stay somewhere in the middle. Okay, we are living in 2024. If we ask you to just cut out all the refined sugars, cut out all the refined processed everything, you cannot really live in this world anymore just like that. You know, so you really need to learn how to do everything in balance, right? Like, let me give you an example. So we worked with someone a few months ago, and when we looked at her food intake and everything, all she eats is just fried foods, food from Starbucks, KFC, pizza. She doesn't really cook anything from home. Okay, so she really want to change her eating habits. But at this point, it's really hard for her to change because her brain has rewired into eating hyperpalatable foods, and it does not like healthy food. So just imagine, she's standing right here. Okay. And if we ask her to go all the way to the other end and start eating healthy foods, whole foods, fruits, and everything, that's very unrealistic. That person won't be able to do it. Okay. So we need to work on this kind of people. And if you, whoever listening to you, if you are this person, what you can do, say, for example, is look at what your regular sugar consumption is in a day. Okay. To take this person as an example, when she started working with us, her sugar consumption for a day was 175 grams, around 200 grams a day. So the ideal sugar intake for us regular people is 25 grams. So don't you think it's quite a big jump to go from 200 gram consumption to 25 grams? All of a sudden, it's a steep, right? No, you won't be able to sustain that. So what can we do here so that we are still allowing her to eat whatever she is eating at the moment, and we're not throwing her into the other end and she freaking out there, but we are still working on her and giving her the support she needs and helping her reduce that weight. So what we did with her is going from 125 to maybe 170 in the next 4 weeks is much more attainable than going from a 200 to a 25 gram, right? So how can you slowly reduce the amount of, you know, processed food consumption that you're consuming at the moment, you know, slowly coming off week by week? It is going to take some time for you to get to 25. We're talking about maybe 1 or 1.5 years for you to get from 200 to 25, right? But allow yourself that time. You give yourself that grace so that you're not like, you know, jumping the gun or anything. You're giving yourself that time to slowly work on it, you know, and learning how to incorporate these foods, but some whole foods in there as well, so that we are creating some kind of a balance here. And this has to be unique to each individual's situation, if that makes sense.
Okay. And Anoop, for men also, same thing?
It's kind of the same for whether you're a man or a woman. Like you don't want to be on both either end of the extremes, because that's going to be like, again, like if bodybuilding or something, if that's your profession, if that's your way of living, then for sure you have to be really strict on yourself. But then you're already trained your body at that point. You can tolerate those ends. But for a normal person who's just trying to lose weight, who just want to stay fit, you don't want to be on either end. Like 25 grams of sugar is going to be really, really tough on pretty much anyone. I don't do 25 grams every single day. That's going to be too strict. I want sugar on my coffee. I want to enjoy life, right? I don't want to stay away from sugary foods. So don't try and be on like either ends. You can be somewhere in the middle and still enjoy your life and not put on that extra weight. So I don't have six pack. I'm not trying to get a six pack at this point. Because if you want to get six pack, you really, it's not just the muscle, you shouldn't have any like very tiny amount of fat on top of the muscles. Otherwise you might have six pack under your fat, but it won't show. See that six pack, you have to basically lose pretty much all the fat that's on your tummy. And if you look at your tummy, that's the last place your body takes the fat away from. People don't really think about it. Especially like in my case, like when I was in my teens when I was in my 20s, I was like really thin. I was a person who you'll call skinny fat. My hands, my chest, my legs, everything was like really thin, but I had fat around my tummy. People think that thin people are really healthy, but that's not right. I was like super unhealthy. I was eating unhealthy, and as well as I used to get sick quite often. I used to see doctors quite often because I was underweight. I found out that in the worst way possible. I was doing my degree. I went to give a blood donation camp, and everything checked out. But when they checked my weight, I was like below 50 kilos. So I was underweight. They didn't let me do a blood donation, and I was like embarrassed. Like I'm a healthy person. I should be able to donate my blood, but I was underweight, and I was trying to eat more food to put my weight up. But then my tummy fat just goes. My weight was increasing a little bit, but the fat deposition on my tummy was going up way more, and I was ashamed to take my shirt off in public. I didn't want to post any pictures of me without any shirt in public, because it didn't look good. I was thin, but I didn't look good because I had fat around my tummy. Because the people I want to tell that is tummy area, that it does, if you store fat around your tummy, it doesn't hinder your movements. If you have fat around your arms or legs, it hinders your movement. So whenever you have fat in your body deposits around your tummy because it doesn't affect your day-to-day living. It doesn't affect your day-to-day movements. So that's the first place your body stores fat. So if you have fat, that most of the time it'll be around your tummy. And once that's filled, then it'll go to your arms and legs and chest and everything. So that's the same, that's the science behind it. And if you think about that science, a tummy will be the last place your body takes the fat away from. So if you want to have a six-pack abs, you pretty much shouldn't have any fat left in your body. Not much. left in your body so that you can see the muscles, your abs through your skin. So if you want to get to that stage, you have to be really, really restrictive. And like you can actually look up in YouTube on about the several celebrities who have six-pack abs, what they had to go through to get that six-pack abs for that particular movie. They'll tell you that, like, I forgot, I think it was Zac Efron or something. You can Google it or check in YouTube. He'll tell you in an interview that he had to drink, like he ate so much chicken breast. He got so fed up that he started putting chicken breast, boiled chicken breast in a blender and drinking it. So if you really want to have a life like that, sure, go ahead. That's, you can lose weight, you can have six pack abs, just eat chicken and broccoli, fine. But if you want to enjoy your food and just want to look fit, you should be able to do that.
By eating broccoli.
And but a lot of people don't realize that there's two different kinds of fat in the body, correct? There's white and brown fat. And a lot of the fats can build up around your heart, around your different body parts. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. Like when you think about fat, like you need fat because fat is not bad. Okay, your body needs fat. And the fat that covers the organs, it is there as a protective mechanism. Just think about fat as an airbag in a car, right? So if car goes in an accident, the airbag deploys to protect the driver so that your driver is not getting injured and hopefully not going to die. So it's the same function the fat has in your body, right? It is going to protect your organs from all sort of damages and this and that and everything. So you need fat, but the amount of fat you have does play a major role in actually so many different functions. Like we can literally talk about this for hours today. So that's how extensive it is. One of the main functions fat does is actually create your hormones. All your hormones are produced from fat. Okay, the mother hormone is produced from fat, and from that mother hormone is pregnenolone. All the other baby hormones, like, you know, so for example, estrogen, progesterone, your testosterone, everything else is produced. Okay, so having a good amount of fat is really important for that hormonal balance. Another thing is it is going to do, again, it also revolves back to hormones, is your hunger hormone and satiating hormone. Right, your leptin and your ghrelin. So for your body to release those hormones and for your brain to get the signal from these little messengers, you need to have enough amount of fat. So having fat is not a bad thing, but then again, your body fat percentage has to be anywhere between like 20 to 24%, you know, that's in within the normal body mass index. You know, then you'll be able to live a healthy life. You're not going to have metabolic disorders and this and that, pre-diabetes, which we talked about lightly in our conversation here. All those things are important for your body. You know, so fat is important. It's just the fact that you don't need to have like too much of it. When there is too much of it, all the things that we talked about hormonal wise get disrupted to in so many different levels. Yeah.
Okay, so the only reason why, because I'm reading a book. I love to read. I've read over 6,000 books, and a lot of them are health related. And you know, it seems like it's crazy how a lot of European countries like Italy, France, they eat a higher fat diet, but have lower amounts of heart risk, heart disease. And here, a lot of times we try to eliminate the fat and we go higher carbs, but now we have a higher amount of diabetes. So yeah. it's kind of like having that decent mix, right? Where you should try to be cognizant of how much fat you're putting in your diet, but I think be a little bit more cognizant of how much carbs you're actually putting in your diet at the same time, right?
It's kind of also about when you say carbs, it's also about what kind of carbs you're putting into your body. It's not just about the ratio. Due to the advertisement and everything, what most of the elderly who are like diabetic or pre-diabetic in that scenario, they want to have a light breakfast or whatever. So what our culture is kind of pushing is basically have cereals. It's like super healthy. Have cereals in the morning for breakfast, cereals and milk. Awesome stuff, right? But it's just think about the glycemic index of cereal. It's just super high. you'd be better off eating a slice of whole wheat bread. The glycemic index is way less than that cereal. It takes more time to digest, and not just digest. When you eat a food, it depends on how processed the food is. There are certain things comes into play. So the more processed the food is, it's just easier to eat, right? Cereal compared to, like, just take the cereal and the bread. Cereal is just way easier to eat. You'll be okay just one bite, or pretty much some of them will even melt in your mouth. Even if it doesn't have any zero sugar, it will melt in your mouth. But the glycemic index is, like, super high. So you get a high sugar spike when you eat that food because of the high glycemic index. Whereas something as with comparatively less glycemic index as a bread, it's not going to melt in your mouth. You actually have to chew it. So it's going to take energy to digest that food. It's going to take energy from your body to actually chew that food for your digestive juices has to work. So it takes more energy to produce your digestive juices. So, and it takes more time and energy to digest that slice of bread compared to having a big bowl of cereal, whereas the cereal is going to get melted in your mouth or get absorbed quite fast. And the faster something get absorbed, the higher sugar spike you're going to get. And again, that fat deposition is happening whenever unfortunately, due to all the ads and everything, we think that cereals are super healthy. It shouldn't be that way. You have to actually, the more whole foods you eat, better it is. Even if you're eating more food, it takes more energy from your body to actually eat and digest that food.
And, like, just circling back to where you said, in some part of the world, some people are okay with consuming more amount of fat, and some of us here in the North America is not. Like, just think about from, like, an ethnic standpoint and what happened, like, centuries ago, right? Some people around the Arctic and all that, all they had access to is just meat. You know, in the ice, you cannot really think about growing vegetables and things like that. And, like, those days, we don't have, like, frozen vegetables. Now, most people have access to. So those people are like meat eaters. Like, that's how they survived the winters and the cold and everything. So people coming from that kind of ethnicity, their body is, like, genetically modified that way through centuries of just eating that kind of food. So their body can break down and consume, and it's not going to cause them any metabolic disorders because that's how their bodies were developed. And same with drinking milk as well. So, you know, like the cows that came from, you know, European countries and things like that, people over there can consume more dairy products compared to us here, because, you know, that's all they had to consume years ago for them to survive. So their body got adjusted to it, and they're okay doing that. And it's same applies to soybeans as well. Like, us Indians can consume a lot of soybeans and not get sick from it. Because, you know, again, dating back to, you know, the poverty times and not able to eat it and only consume what we have, you know, we might have consumed a lot of soybeans. So our bodies are, like, designed to, like, break down and use soybeans, you know, the nutrients from it in much more of a realistic way than compared to people from a different ethnic background or different country that are not used to eating those kind of food, right? So it also will date back to, like, you know, what ethnicity you are and what your body has gotten used to over the years. That will also have an impact on how we actually, you know, store fat from certain foods as well.
And all of a sudden, if you're changing that habits, that's going to be the more trouble. So
yeah.
If you're starting kind of a diet or something like that, now you're changing entirely the way you're eating all of a sudden, and your body is basically going to be on a shock. And doesn't matter how much of macros you're trying to adjust, it's going to be really hard for your body to process that.
Especially, like you said, like, you survive better or not survive, like, you feel better in a low carb environment. So yeah. Meaning your body is used to that. There's nothing wrong with that, right? So your body is used to that. Just do what works for you and make sure that you're doing it the right way so that, you know, you're able to get to the other end of the spectrum in terms of your health and fitness. So there's no right or wrong. It's just learning to maneuver it.
All right. So say me and my wife, or somebody, you know, a husband and wife in their age 40, they walk into your establishment and say, listen, I'm 40, She's 40. We don't want to bodybuild. We just want to get healthy. We know we both got hormonal stuff going on because we're in our 40s now. So what are your top three pieces of advice for each of them to get healthy? Not worry about, you know, I mean, to get to a healthy weight to where we're going to be able to, you know, live longer, but not to be crazy. We're not bodybuilding or anything like that. So what would be your top three pieces of advice?
Yeah, the first thing would be do not mindlessly cut calories. Okay, it's very detrimental that you're eating enough food, especially you're over the age of 40. Your body actually needs food to do so many different functions, and your hormones are constantly changing. So your body needs fuel, and fuel comes through food. So please do not mindlessly cut calories. Second thing is that consume enough amount of protein. And this is especially true for women. Women do not consume enough protein, and women compared to men has already decreased muscle mass because we do not have a lot of testosterone like men do. Okay, so inherently we do not have a lot of muscle. And circling back to what I said earlier, you need muscle for your body to let go of fat. So consume enough protein, and the protein you consume is totally going to depend on your goal. Okay, so the ideal rule of thumb, if you're like, you know, just doing 3 to 4 days a week of exercise at the gym, and you're not really focusing on, you know, intense stuff, like you're not a power lifter, bodybuilder, you're doing super things, crazy things, and it's not crazy, but intense things like that, but you're just like a regular person, aim for maybe 0.8 grams of protein per body weight. It's standard, right? So aim for that. And the last and the final tip I have for you is that, again, do not overdo the exercise. Okay, as it's crazy how many women still try to do 1 to 2 hours of cardio and then a ton of weightlifting 7 days a week in the gym, and they sit there and think, why am I not losing any fat? Okay, so it's very important that you should do workout. You know, I'm not saying that you shouldn't do workout, but keep it minimal. Just do workout what is necessary for just to keep you active and get rid of that fat. Do not overdo it. So those would be my three big tips. Do not undereat food, eat enough protein, and do not overexercise. Do just the right amount of it.
Also, just I want to add one more thing. If you can, on top of all these three things, if you can add enough fiber in your diet.
Yeah.
I can't stress that enough. Especially people in North America, we don't eat enough fiber. It doesn't matter what age you are, most of us don't eat enough fiber. Like we tend to see like usually 10 grams or most of the time even less than 10 grams of fiber a day. That's the average of how a North American population eats. It doesn't matter what age group you're in, that's how it is. So the older you are, you have to actually have more fiber. I would say at least somewhere close to 25 grams. It's a good number. And fiber is so much important. Like, first of all, it has so much benefits, especially for weight loss. It does help with weight loss. It makes you more satiated. And also, fiber, just we cannot digest fiber as it is. So when you eat fiber, it's going to pass through your intestine as fiber. So it basically cleans your intestine. And so that's one of the benefits of fiber. And when you look into the colon cancer scenario of North American population, it's through the roof. Even young people are getting colon cancer because of our diet, because of our fast food habits, because of the heavy fat diet that we tend to eat. So fiber is like a pretty easy thing that you can do. You don't ideally you have to eat more green leafy vegetables and vegetables, but it's easy to say that, but it's not going to happen for most of us. Our eating habits are changed so much that we don't really want to eat those kind of foods. In that case, at least you could do is it's a quick fix. You can have a fiber supplement, ideally in a powder form. You can just mix it with water and drink it. I'm not going to endorse on any product, but you can just find so many fiber supplements in the internet or in Amazon or whatever. Just try and get something that has something closer to 10 grams per scoop or per serving. That is kind of a good number to look at. And you can work your way. If you want to take more scoops, you can do that depending on how much fiber you're consuming throughout the day from other sources. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty easy to do for most of us. And that'll take care of like the problems like colon cancer. I'm not saying it's going to avoid colon cancer 100%. I'm not saying that. But at least it reduces the occurrence of chances of that happening.
Okay, so now one, you know, last two things is when somebody asked me, you know, because when I was with GNC, like I said, for 30 years, and the first week of January, everybody would buy like $400 worth of shit, putting all on the counter, and I'm the kind of guy that I look through their stuff and I start putting stuff back on the counter. I'm like, you don't need this, you don't need that, you don't need that. And they ask me, well, what do I need? And I'm like, for me, for supplements, you know, depending on your age and all that, I tell anybody, you might want a pre-workout. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be caffeinated. It could be non-caffeinated. A good protein and a good high-quality multivitamin is a lot of people need. And like you said, maybe a prebiotic or probiotic or something to mix in. So you're going to the bathroom a lot, but I don't think a person needs a lot of supplements. I think food should be your medicine, but what are your thoughts on taking certain supplements and what do you guys personally take? And you don't have to mention any names, but what do you guys take supplements?
Of course we do take supplements. But again, going back to what you said, like your food, you can get most of the supplements, you know, from the nutrition from the food itself. So if you're not able to get that in this day and age, sometimes it's really hard to get it. And again, it will circle back to consistency, right? The, you know, the nutritious food that you're eating, it has to be consistent. You have to consistently eat nutritious food. Otherwise, you can go deficient. And especially if you have a goal of wanting to build muscle and things like that, you need to consume enough amount of protein and things like that. So for us on a daily basis, what we consume is protein powder for sure, because it's so difficult for us, not just us, for anyone to meet that protein requirement, especially when you have a goal of building muscle. So that's one thing that I consume. And pre-workout for me is like optional. It really depends on the mood. So some days I can just use coffee as my pre-workout and I should be pretty fine. But then some days I feel like, oh, I'm so exhausted, I'm so tired, but I know I have to hit the gym because, you know, you're working on a goal, not just for January, but for the next month too. So those days I usually take a pre-workout. And again, like I only need a little bit. Okay, I don't need the entire scoop. Maybe a little bit goes a long way for me. So it really depends on some days. So pre-workout is something that I occasionally take. And something else that I have been taking so far is creatinine, because it does really help with muscle growth and recovery, repair and things like that. And it also gives you more energy and stamina for you to lift heavier, especially for women. If you're not taking creatinine, I mean, I'm not saying that you should, but that's something that you can consider. If you're trying so hard in the gym and you're not seeing any results muscle-wise, building-wise, then taking creatinine could be a good option. And then fiber supplement is something that we do, but not again on a daily, on days that we feel like we're going to eat so unhealthy, we're going to eat a full damn pizza today, and then we're going to eat a part of biryani because we know we're going to go attend an event. On those kind of days, we do take fiber supplement for sure, because we need to make sure that we're not overeating. You know, we want to eat that pizza, we want to eat that biryani, we want to eat all of that. There is going to be so much trending salt and trending sugar and everything added to it, which is going to make you bloated and make you gain 5 pounds the next day. If you want to avoid that, try taking a fiber supplement just before an event, or you taking that big ball, you know, big large pizza. So it will allow you to eat less food, keep you satiated, and you won't, you know, store too much of fat, and will avoid that.
Also help to digest that food way slower, way longer, so that you won't get a sugar spike. As well. And also fiber, if you're comparing up with other foods, if there's toxins in your other foods, it helps to kind of get rid of a portion of the toxins as well. So there's that added benefits for fiber.
Yeah, but those are some of the supplements that we take on a daily basis.
But then always think that it's a long goal. It's not just for January or February. It's a long goal. It's your health. You have to take care of it, and not just for the first couple
weeks of January or even months. Yeah.
All right. So the last question is, you know, I've had several professional athletes on, and we always talk about the workouts, but we don't ever talk about the recovery, mm-hmm. and how important sleep is, how important being hydrated is, how important, you know, not watching TV right before the bed, so you're actually getting good sleep, you're getting into, you know, getting REM. Like for me, I take 3 milligrams of melatonin at night to help my body sleep, help me get to sleep, and helps me recover a little bit. So talk about, you know, sleeping and how important sleep is to your recovery, because that's when you're actually growing, is when you're sleeping. And if you're not sleeping, you're not recovering. And then if you don't sleep, your hormones are going to get even worse. So talk about sleep and recovery.
Oh my gosh, this is such a nerdy topic. Like I can go on forever on this topic. Oh, I don't want to get started, but we'll keep it very short. Like sleep is so important. It's just so underrated these days. People hit the gym 2 hours, 3 hours, 7 days a week and do not even think of rest days or recovery days, especially like sleeping is so important because your sleeping cycle is directly correlated to the way your body releases cortisol. Okay, so your body releases cortisol, your stress hormone, in diurnal pattern, meaning when you're waking up, your cortisol goes up. When you're going to bed, your cortisol goes down, right? And this cortisol is so important because if your cortisol is not like up and down in this diurnal pattern, you can see like some people are stressed out all the time. They do everything they can, but nothing is going to show on their body. Why? Because like they're not sleeping enough and the cortisol is staying up high all the time. It is, you're not giving yourself permission so that your cortisol can go down and relax and repair and all that while you're sleeping. So it's very important. And another thing this does, not having enough sleep does to your body, is really messes up your glucose levels. It does. The way your body releases glucose, stores fat, especially that belly fat. If your belly fat is not going away with caloric restriction and over, you know, exercising a lot and weightlifting and all that, look at the stress level you have. Okay, it's probably that has having a direct impact on the way your body is storing that belly fat. So going back to like, how can I really make sure that I have good sleep, as you can, again, start off with, you know, maybe like doing a bedtime yoga or something to like really calm your nerves down, taking a hot shower at night. You know, can also really help. What we do personally is that after 7 p.m. or 6:45 p.m. is when our kids have supper. So they have supper. As soon as they have supper, what we do is we turn off all the white lights off and we turn on the you know, the yellow lights on. So just a signal for our body that, okay, everything is getting darker. Sleep time is approaching. Okay. And another thing that, so we are literally cueing your brain to think that, you know, your body is, you're ready for sleep. It is sleep time. So let's bring that cortisol levels down so that the melatonin levels go up. This all should happen automatically. Our bodies are so capable of doing this, but we actually cueing it is going to also help it even more a little bit, you know, as we age and all that. So that's one thing we do. Another thing we do is like after those yellow lights come out, we will not watch TV. So the TV time is completely gone. We do not have screen time for 2 hours prior to us going to bed. So that will also cue your brain that you're not getting any direct blue light into your eyes. I mean, you could use those yellow lights on the screen on the phone if you want to.
Blue light filters.
But yeah, there are filters, but I would say a good rule of thumb is stay away from your phone.
The less stimulation before you go to bed, the better.
Yeah. So yeah, those are some of the things that we do. And personally, I like to do a little bit of a journaling before I go to bed. It also helps me to relax, to unwind. Again, giving my brain another cue that bedtime is approaching. In the next 5 minutes, I want to hit the bed and sleep. So I used to have sleep problems in the past. I could not sleep at all at night. But by just implementing these few things really helped me get a good night. Like I do get a good 8 hours of sleep and it leaves me supercharged in the morning and I'm feeling so ready. And it's very important. If you're really having a weight loss goal, if you're having, doesn't matter what your goal is, if you really want to work on yourself, your body, your life, taking rest and having enough amount of sleep is so paramount. You cannot really, you know, discount that at all. So,
and like cortisol, the more stressed you are, the more high cortisol you have. And cortisol is also a kind of an inflammatory hormone. Mm-hmm. So it makes you inflammatory. You look basically more puffy at the point. And also cortisol, it kind of acts your fight or flight response. The more high cortisol levels you have, your body's kind of constantly in that fight or flight response. At that stage, your body doesn't really want to lose fat. because it's kind of hold on to our energy and all the fat. Because what if you need to fight or fight a situation happens? So your body's always ready for that. That's why due to the high cortisol. So it doesn't want to let go of any energy, any potential energy your body has, which is your fat storage. So it's going to hold on to water. It's going to hold on to salt. It's going to hold on to your fat. So basically, your weight is going to go up. It's going to be really hard to lose your fat. So that's the aspect of if you're trying to lose fat, that you really don't want high cortisol levels.
Yeah. And that tying down to the muscle recovery as well, like your body is not going to use that energy for like building and recovering muscle, right? Your body is always going to prioritize survival over weight loss or muscle recovery, right? It's always going to be the survival. So sleep is very important.
Okay, so last question is, I knew you guys were coming on, so I asked a bunch of my friends, you know, what questions do you have from them? And I think out of like 100 questions, about 50 of them were, let me just check for sure. So I wrote it down. Okay, they said, why? And this is like from 50 different people, so it wasn't just me. Why do I wake up every morning between 2 and 3 a.m.?
Oh my goodness.
Arcadian rhythms or something. And I was like, I don't know, but I'm going to ask.
Yeah. Two different things. One is about the cortisol. Okay, because your cortisol is constantly staying up. You probably are super stressed out. So go back and sit down and write some of the stresses that you have in your life. Okay, it's probably could be your job, your relationship, whatever that is. Identify what is stressing you up the most, because if you do not allow your body to like, you know, get rid of that stress, get rid of that, that cortisol stays high. So it doesn't just stay high. It kind of little bit spikes a little bit here and there at night. So hence we wake up all of a sudden at night and it feels such a hard time to go back to sleep. So your stress has a direct, you know, role to play. Another thing is also the way you consume your dinner. Okay, because if you do not have a very good balanced dinner at bedtime, meaning if you are someone who constantly like to eat like high carb, high fatty, you know, processed food at night, then your body's sugar spike, remember we talked about having those sugar spike, the body will spike its sugar 2 to 3 hours, depending on how much time it does take for the body to go through that food that you just consumed. So probably a couple of hours later, your body is going to have a sugar spike. So when your body has a sugar spike, again, either you're going to wake up and not able to sleep, or you are going to wake up and feel hungry and you probably want a snack. So look at your eating habits. If you're someone eating at 9 p.m., 10 p.m., 11 p.m. at night, and if you're waking up like just after you go to bed around 1 or 2 p.m., this could probably be the reason why, like the glucose playing its little dance at night. So having a balanced meal and especially fiber during night is going to fix this for you.
It all depends on what kind of food you had for your dinner and how much of a portion you had for dinner. The heavier the meal, the higher the sugar spike. And usually what happens after sugar spike is what we call a sugar crash. That's when you feel like you need to eat, you have cravings like, I need carb foods or I need sugary stuff. If you're waking up in the middle of the night, especially after having a huge dinner, it usually happens like depending on the food you ate, again, 2.5 hours to 3.5 hours in between that period of time. And the later the dinner, that's kind of when you see the people wake up around 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. That's the 2.5 hour, 3 hour time period from the dinner. That's if you're hungry, it usually what that says, that's just sugar crash. So either you have to change the composition of your dinner, or sometimes you have to make eat a smaller dinner. But due to our work schedule, like we don't have time in the morning, we are busy, we are at work in, during lunchtime. So we get home, we cook or whatever, or we get takeout, and then we have a late dinner usually. And usually it's a heavy dinner because like food is not just nutrition, it's also comfort for most of us. So we tend to eat a heavy dinner because we have time. That's the only time we have. We can sit in front of the TV or just wind down and eat. So we tend to eat a lot more heavy dinner, especially our North American population, and usually it's heavy on fat as well. So it takes a longer time to digest, especially when it's really heavy on fat. You don't really need that much energy for your dinner, because you typically you're going to sleep in the next couple of hours. You're going to sleep for the next 5-6 hours or so, at least, hopefully. Your body won't be able to use that much energy, especially some people eat like 1,000 calories or 800 calories or even higher. So your body won't be able to use it. And when your body won't be able to use it, it's going to store that as fat, and especially around your tummy area. And it's one of the biggest problems that we face, that you have a huge belly just because of that, because the way you're eating your dinner. You again feel awake. You might wake up hungry in the middle of the night because of the sugar crash you're having. And that this is one of the main reasons.
Yeah.
Okay, so last question is, how do we find you guys? How do we support your mission? And what do you guys got going on?
Yeah, for sure. So first of all, like Richard, it was such a pleasure to be on your show today. We really enjoyed having this conversation. So I do really want to do something really special for your audience. Like what I'm about to share with you guys, I know that you know, almost 50 people asked this same question here, or 100 people responded to you. So I really want to give something special to them, and also something special to the people that are watching you. And we're going to give something to you guys that it's not typically something that something that we give out to our paying clients. But since you guys stayed until the very end of the show, I want to give it for you to absolutely free, just as a way of us thanking you. So this is what I call the midlife makeover, metamorphosis makeover kit. So what this will give you is it will give you 50 plus high protein recipes, and it's also going to have a workout schedule that is already done for you for the next 7 days. It's going to be especially good for people that do not really have so much of time to spend in the gym, that they want to work out from home or something. So it's going to be great for them. So it's going to be a very good tool that you can use, especially if you're over the age of 35 and really struggling hard to lose weight. So if you guys want this for absolutely for free of charge, all you need to do is just go to my Instagram. It's just Anne Maria Tom, and just send me the keyword Richard Kaufman, and I'm more than happy to send it over to you. Again, it's a midlife metamorphosis kit. Just send me the keyword Richard Kaufman on Instagram at Anne Maria Tom, and I'll personally send it over to you.
Okay, and what I'm going to do is, because I promised Devin, whenever you send me a great guest like you guys, I'm going to put you guys in the front of the line. I have 300 episodes I haven't released yet, but you guys are going to the head of the line. So it's going to go out on Tuesday. So this episode going out to this is coming up Tuesday. So I'm going to tag you and everything, and I'm going to send you all the episodes to share it out. So let you guys know it's coming out Tuesday, and you're going on 35 different social media platforms.
Amazing.
So I appreciate you guys for coming on.
Thank you so much, Richard. It was such a pleasure meeting you, and such a pleasure to be on your big show here. So I hope we inspired some people and gave you tons of valuable advices and nuggets for you to take and implement right away. Let us know how this show went.
Yep, and thank you, and Anoop. I appreciate both of you, and Devin Rodriguez. If you don't know Devin Rodriguez, you guys need to know who Devin Rodriguez is before you can even get on his calendar. You might not be able to get on his calendar now. So you guys, if you guys wanted to be on podcasts that are at the top in the world, you need to know Devin Rodriguez. So Anoop and Anne, thank you so much for everything, guys.
Thank you so much.
Well, you guys have a great week. And guys, remember, vertical momentum, the only way to go is butt up. And if you watch this show, you know I'm a big Joel Osteen guy. And remember that it's our choice to be a victim or to be the victor. And anybody that watches this show, we're victors. We're no longer living a victim mentality. So I love you guys. And thank you guys so much. And have an amazing week.
Awesome. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.